HireBotics is a software and robotics company that aims to make automation easy and accessible to companies of all sizes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Robot Industry Podcast. I'm really pleased to let you know that Rob Goldies from HireRobotics is our guest today on the podcast. Rob is the co-founder and CEO of HireBotics. Founded in 2015, HireBotics is a Universal Robots OEM whose cloud software has made automation accessible to businesses of all sizes, and its easy-to-use application solutions, continuous monitoring, and instantly available 24/7 support. HireBotics' cloud platform and mobile app unlock unique capabilities, deliver application-specific skills to UR cobots, and enable revolutionary experiences for everyday end users. Rob, thanks for coming on the podcast.
I appreciate you having me.
Hey, maybe we should talk to people. I'm sure that a lot of our audience knows what a UR cobot is, but maybe you could tell us what a Universal Robotics collaborative robot is.
Sure. So these are six-axis robots. They look really sleek. You may have seen them in movies or TV shows, but they're called collaborative robots because they're inherently safe to be around. There's a bunch of safety features built into them. There's users have the ability to limit speed and torque, limit all the joints, and so it unlocks the ability for new types of applications that don't require the same caging that used to be, you know, that you would expect to see around traditional automation. It's kind of like the transition from the mainframe era to the PC era. That sort of opportunity for expansion in terms of letting people take advantage of automation.
And so you probably say that like collaborative robots make automation easier, more accessible to small and medium-sized enterprises?
For sure, no doubt.
And you were one of the first companies to offer robotics as a service. So can you explain that and when did you get started?
Sure. So we started the business in late 2015. We actually had already had experience with Universal Robots, their collaborative robot, that dated back to 2014. But for us and our, you know, really our the initial business model was to make it easy and accessible to companies. You need to figure out ways that de-risk that decision. The product itself is inherently easier to use, but if you think about the average small to medium-sized manufacturer, they still struggle with the capital investment and then the know-how that requires to put in place automation and take advantage of it. And so we designed that initial business model to allow customers, users, to pay for their automation by the hour. That's pretty unique. It was back then, and it still is to this day, because it's quite a bit different than renting a piece of equipment, because we're closely aligning our incentives with our customers' incentives. The more they run, the more they pay, but the more they run, the more parts or widgets or whatever that robot's doing, you know, they're getting that benefit.
Yes, and that's RaaS. And so can you tell the audience what that means?
Robots as a service has been this term. It sort of takes from the software as a service model, where customers, companies are paying like a subscription. They're paying for their use of that product or service. And so to us, when we think about robots as a service, it is not just the ability to rent a piece of equipment. It is the entire business model around how you're paying for it, the fact that it includes service and support, all bundled into a consumption-based pricing model.
And that's because CapEx is so complicated and so valuable to manufacturers.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point that I guess I easily can gloss over. CapEx is, you know, there's always different things that are pulling for CapEx. It's easy to put numbers in a spreadsheet and say, this makes sense. This can justify the investment. But there's tons of projects in any manufacturing facility that are always pulling for those dollars. And for a lot of companies, that CapEx spend isn't just numbers in a spreadsheet to say that, yes, this makes sense, let's go make the investment. But there's also other risks associated with it too, because, you know, frankly, and a lot of times people don't like to talk about this, there's plenty of automation projects that fail, that a company makes that investment, that capital investment in a piece of equipment, a piece, you know, a robot or some sort of application, and it doesn't work out the way they want, and they struggle with it, and they struggle with it. And so part of robots as a service, beyond just de-risking that capital, it also de-risks that decision-making process beyond the capital. So you think about, you know, we've had some very large companies over the years rent or, you know, take us up on this robots as a service business model. And we really de-risk that decision for the plant manager in a large company or someone, you know, some sort of mid-level management person where they're not going forward to higher ups in their large company trying to justify capital to find out that the project didn't return as they projected it would.
And so by de-risking, you take on that risk. And so it's got to work and you're taking that full responsibility, correct?
That's right. Yeah. So our model has definitely changed over the years, but in those early days for the first couple of years, you know, our pitch to manufacturers was, we know what we can do with these robots, right? We know what we can automate. If we sign up to do a task to put in place a piece of automation for you, we're taking on that capital risk. And so the customers are not signing up for like a 3-year, 5-year commitment. They're truly, you know, we're giving them a worker. It just happens to be, you know, 6 motors and a computer called a robot. And they're paying for it as they use it. And so it's on us to source the capital, design the, you know, things like end of arm tooling, program that robot, integrate it to their machinery. And then, you know, we have always cloud connected the systems that we put in the field and kind of hook it into our infrastructure so that we can monitor it and bill it.
So from your perspective, and you're in a lot of factories and you're having a lot of conversations with manufacturers, what's happening high level in manufacturing across North America?
Yeah, so I mean, the common theme over and over again is that manufacturers struggle to find people. It's easy to have a headline in a, you know, I'll say a main, you know, popular newspaper or online or something like that, that will try to, I'll say, scare people into thinking robots are taking jobs. The fact is that the manufacturing base, that the number of people working in manufacturing continues to shrink, causing manufacturers to find other ways to get, you know, to meet their deliveries for their customers. And so without a doubt, the common and highest theme, you know, problem that customers face is that they struggle to find people that want to show up every day consistently to make parts or whatever it is that company does to ship to their customers.
It's a common theme and not a surprise to on the podcast. So what industries are kind of your bullseye industries when you're talking to people who are looking to engage with HireBotics?
So these days we've sort of focused our business model down and into metal fabricators. And so we have a welding solution today. We have a new product that we're announcing in the, you know, around welding as well. And so what we've sort of honed in on is there's this shortage of folks in manufacturing all across the country and in North America and really even outside of the North American market. But it gets really difficult when you think about skilled labor. So it's one thing to say, well, a manufacturer is looking for someone to, you know, pull parts off of this conveyor and put them in a box. That's a low skilled manufacturing job. But welding, as an example, is a very high skilled manufacturing job. And there's a massive, massive shortage that's only getting worse around trying to find skilled welders in manufacturers. And so we've honed in our offering over the past couple of years to help satisfy that need for manufacturers specifically around welding.
So let's switch our conversation a little bit because we really want to talk about apps today and what we're kind of calling, or what I'm calling, the appification of automation from a couple different levels. And you really like that term, correct?
I love it. Love it.
And you can please feel free to use it. So when we think about applications, you know, I kind of think about things on my phone, things on my computer. Which apps do you use?
So I'm a Mac and Apple user, like through and through. I am on a few different social media platforms, mostly just consuming, not necessarily contributing to conversations, but I use a number of different social media applications. Certainly web technologies is very, you know, there's a lot you can do with web, but, you know, the standard productivity types of apps that I'm using, you know, whether it's to run the business or you know, put forth quotes and opportunities for customers.
And what do you think is important about applications just in general?
Yeah, so when people think about an application, you're getting a piece of software, whether it's installed on your phone or your computer or it's delivered via the web, that is purpose-built to do a task. So anybody, you know, I shouldn't say anybody, but, you know, you could certainly write software yourself to crunch numbers that we call a spreadsheet. You could certainly write software yourself to become a text editor that, you know, competes with something like Microsoft Word or Google Docs. But nobody really wants to do that, right? They want to get a piece of software, whether it's delivered in a browser or downloaded to their desktop or phone, that performs a task, does it well. Sort of the software and the complexity of how that works fades into the background, and you can focus on what you need to do.
You know what I think about when I think about apps? I think about apps that are really easy to use, mm-hmm. that look nice, that I don't have to take a training course for. And mm-hmm. I wanted to switch our conversation about applications that are going to be used in manufacturing. And for you, what comes to mind when you're thinking about an app in manufacturing?
So for me, I gravitate towards robotics and automation. That's sort of where I spend my time and my mind share. But the problem that we sort of recognize and why we think about apps, and you know, I know we'll kind of get to more of this, but is you, if you buy a robot today or a piece of automation equipment, it's kind of dumb, right? Like you get it out of the box. There's no software, like there's operating system level software, but the user has to program it to do a task. And so take welding, for example, or machine tending or some application, you know, that's the end user's application. Everybody's starting from scratch, right? They're all sort of opening it up, deciding what attachments need to go on that robot. Maybe it's got to incorporate vision. And they're all starting from this, you know, sort of low level to build out the application that they want to solve on their manufacturing floor. And so we see an opportunity in that this is the direction we're trying to solve this problem in, is building apps and applications that are purpose built for the end user's application. Take welding, for example, you know, a piece of software that an end user can download on their phone or tablet or access in a web browser and teach, not program, that cobot what it needs to do with all the same sort of interactions. As you said, looks nice. It's very, not intimidating. Dragging and dropping to reorder things, the interactions that a consumer would expect in an app on their phone or something on the web, you know, we want to deliver that to manufacturer users with automation.
And I think it's very exciting when you think of back when you used to work in a plant and you have to go to the IT department to get them to put a piece of software on and maybe go to purchasing and all these steps that you have to take, or you can just download it to your phone.
Yeah, for sure. The barriers just continue to get torn down, right, in terms of how software is delivered. And it opens up more possibilities as well, right? I mean, I can remember myself, I'm not that old, sort of middle-aged guy, but in my early years, right, if you wanted a piece of software, you went down to the computer store and you bought a piece of, you know, literally like shrink wrap software, and you put the disks into your computer and you loaded software. The way software is delivered now over the internet, whether it's downloaded via an app store to your phone, right? It just destroys barriers that made it hard or high friction or hard to experiment and try an app before you decide you're going to commit to buying it. You know, that the internet really has changed how software gets delivered.
Yeah, there's no more friction, right? I can download an app on my phone in seconds if I've got high speed. So you're right. They're all gone. Now you've got a product, Beacon, that you've created, and can you tell the audience like what it is and why is it important?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, we have always cloud connected the cobot applications that we've put into the field. We've done that through software that we've written that runs, I'll say, near to the robot in the cloud and you know, in an app that can be installed. And we sort of got nudged and asked over the years by Universal Robots, who's one of our partners, like, how do you make this available to more people? And so about a year ago, we finally decided to do that, to release, you know, I'll say our capabilities, which we really feel are like superpowers, to the community. And so Beacon is a very low friction way for people to cloud connect their cobots to do, I'll say at first level, just very basic monitoring, alerting, charting of data, real-time data, you know, peace of mind that all files that are on that cobot are backed up securely to the cloud. And so if anything goes wrong with that robot hardware, if anything goes wrong with that application, you know about it, you can recover from it, you can take action without having to stand there and be near your robot or wait for someone on second or third shift to call you. And so we call that Beacon, that software package. It's free for anybody with a universal robot to use. You can go onto the UR Plus website or go to the Hirebotics website and download it, put it on, doesn't require any hardware, runs on the UR controller, and you can, in a matter of minutes, connect a cobot to get some, I'll say, basic but very important monitoring capabilities on your application.
And so who might use this? So it's going to be, would it be the shop floor manager or would it be the operator? Who's going to be using it? Or is it going to be used across a bunch of different job titles in a factory?
Yeah, so various job titles and various partners in that delivery chain of value, I'll say. So what I mean is we have some Beacon customers literally worldwide that are distributors of universal robots, let's say. So we have one in India that signed up and put a bunch of their customers on Beacon. And they do that because they want to save I think one of them has a customer that's 500 kilometers away from their location. They want to be able to provide support to that customer. And so they encourage their customer to sign up for Beacon and invite them, which all can be done within the Beacon application so that their distributor partner can help support the cobot application. But in general, we see management, within a company, we see management level people, we see operators taking advantage of it, people that are near the robot but might not be right next to it, manufacturing engineers that are maybe responsible for uptime and maximizing production, to small business owners that historically before Beacon would have to use like a webcam cam to periodically look at the cobot to see, is it still running or did it have a problem? And now they don't have to do that. They get alerts through Beacon. They get, integration to things like Slack. And so this piece of software that runs on the cobot in the cloud and, in a browser or an application empowers all that.
And so where would it be used, say, so in welding, you've got this this project coming up. How is Beacon going to be integrated there? What kind of game-changing parts does Beacon have?
So this is what gets us really, really excited, right? So we have this, I'll say, foundation level technology called Beacon. And Beacon has been built, not necessarily exposed to the world yet, but is now, to be able to have applications that run within and on top of Beacon. So the cobot welder, we say powered by Beacon, is our first application in the market that runs within Beacon. So what that means is like there's, think of it like an app store within Beacon that we've published the first app, and that app is welding. It allows people to solve the problem around welding with a very easy to use drag and drop interface in a browser, in a phone, on a tablet. But even more sort of behind the scenes is other people will soon be able to publish their own apps, whether it's for their own company to take advantage of, or maybe they want to publish them out for other people to take advantage of.
And that's a very exciting thing, right? When you actually have other people saying, hey, I'd love to open, do you have an open API? Do we say that?
So not yet. It's not open yet, right? So we take advantage of Universal Robots open platform, but
yep.
But we will allow people to write applications and publish them on the Beacon platform. And importantly, at least the way we think about that is that the application might not be like welding or machine tending. That application could be integration to Oracle ERP, could be integration to some other system, right? So there'll be different types of applications that can get contributed and published within Beacon that will do different things, that will extend the abilities of your cobot beyond just what you might think about today.
Well, it's very exciting to kind of think of what the future could be for Beacon. What about security?
Yeah, we take security very seriously from the ground up. I mean, people can throw around all sorts of jargon, but we take it very seriously. We don't. When somebody signs up for Beacon, their own tenant gets created and provisioned behind the scenes automatically. We don't have. I personally even don't have access to someone else's tenant. Right. That's locked down. You know, all the kind of, I'll say somewhat buzzwords, right. But end-to-end security, just-in-time provisioning, we take it very seriously and, want that to be just a hassle-free experience.
And, Rob, what do you kind of see the future of Beacon, or can you see that far?
The way we think about it, right. Broad brush. I mentioned this a little bit earlier is that traditional robots were like the mainframe. You required specialized people to work on them. They were typically in rooms with doors that locked, you know, even before like the server rooms and things like that. Collaborative robots are like the PC era, right? So we're now in the 80s where everybody was running out to get a PC and trying to figure out what they could do with it and doing, you know, getting value because they were doing, you know, somewhat basic tasks with the PC and same thing with the cobot. But we want to sort of connect those cobots to the internet to unlock new types of experiences, new types of integrations, new types of applications. So certainly we think a lot about ease of use and providing a different type of experience because it's on a phone, as we talked about earlier. How do you make that experience feel like they're engaging with Twitter or some other type of to-do list application that's very easy to use, but also because it's connected to the cloud, empower users of a Beacon organization to do other integrations that go beyond just our software and what we can envision. So we already have integration to Slack, but maybe you want to do something as basic as like make a light in your work area change colors when the robot needs help, right? That's not trivial to do today. But Beacon can unlock those types of capabilities and people could publish applications that make it even easier.
Now that's very cool. So if there's people, like say from Microsoft or Intel or Twitter listening to this podcast, are you very approachable about offering more integrations or they can write software for you?
For sure. So we know that we don't want to be the ones trying to solve everybody's problem. We want to be able to, we plan to open some doors so that people could write and publish their own applications on Beacon. And so if take Microsoft as an example, right? If there's enough cobot users that use a Microsoft ERP system, right? It might make sense for someone like Microsoft or some partner to provide an integration within Beacon to a Microsoft ERP system. So somebody imagine this user or a company that has a cobot, they have Beacon, they have Microsoft Dynamics or D365. And every time the robot makes a part, they want it to report production to a business system, right? Totally doable. Sure. Because of that pipeline and connectivity that sort of Beacon unlocks and enables.
So thank you very much for coming onto the podcast today. Rob, I really appreciate it. I think it's a very exciting product. And it's a very exciting time for collaborative robots and for products like Beacon. Can you tell me what you do in your off working hours?
Yeah. So, I wish I had some like exciting things to say. I'm an entrepreneur right at heart. I think about the business and customer problems a lot. And so I'll say when I'm not working and not thinking about work, I'm, you know, doing things with my kids. I've got two teenagers in high school, married with two kids. And so we do stuff a lot as a family. I enjoy spending time around my family and kids, but maybe in an unhealthy way, almost like, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about work and getting up early and get, you know, just the excitement of building and helping manufacturers, you know, consumes a lot of time.
I think it's a good answer. Hey, Rob, how do people get a hold of you?
So, would love to hear from listeners. You can go to hirebotics.com to get more information. You can go to hirebotics.com/beacon to get started with Beacon if you want to. You can certainly send me an email, first initial, last name at hirebotics.com.
And Hirebotics is HIREBOTICS.
Yep.
Our sponsor for this episode is Earhart Automation Systems. Earhart builds, commissions, turnkey solutions for their worldwide clients. With over 80 years of precision manufacturing, they understand the complex world of robotics, automated manufacturing, and project management, delivering world-class custom automation on time and on budget. Contact one of their sales engineers to see what Earhart can build for you. That's info at earhartautomation.com. And Earhart is spelled E-H-R-H-A-R-D-T. I'd like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. And these four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, end users, research groups, and consulting firms, and I'm one of those consulting firms, throughout the world that are driving automation forward. And I'd also like to thank our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. And they're at paintedrobot.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Chris Colvin for audio production, my partner, Janet, and our partners, A3 and Painted Robot, and our sponsor, Earhart Automation Systems.